Today's guest was given a 2% chance to live by doctors over a decade ago, and since, by the grace of God, has continued to overcome dozens of life-threatening obstacles. Today, she joins us in studio to share parts of her miraculous and inspirational journey. I'm Charisse Parton, and this is Return to Eden. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm so excited for the show today. We have two very exceptional guests in the Return to Eden studio. He's a board-certified holistic health practitioner, a professional fitness and nutrition specialist, COO, and host of Skywatch TV, Joe Horn.
Hi, Charisse.
Welcome.
Very exciting.
She is a sought-after motivator, encourager, and spiritual advisor whose counsel has impacted spheres of government, media, and the church, both locally and internationally. She's a cancer survivor who has overcome many health obstacles, including losing over 200 pounds through diet and lifestyle changes. Welcome, Debbie Short.
Thank you.
I'm so excited you're here.
I'm excited.
Miss Debbie is a longtime friend of the Skywatch TV family. She's the topic of one of the chapters in Joe Horn's book, Champions, if I remember right.
That's right.
You've been a prayer partner with us for several years, mm-hmm. Whispering Ponies volunteer. You've been on a few shows in the past, mm-hmm. which has been incredible. Welcome to Return to Eden. I'm excited that you're on this set now.
Too.
So some of you viewers might recognize her from some of the past shows. So
that's right.
Really excited to have her. Miss Debbie is determined to reverse disease and reclaim her health, as she puts it, one act of obedience at a time, and is here in hopes to inspire others to do the same. Debbie, you've been on a journey for quite some time.
Mm-hmm, a long time.
And you've had some significant challenges that have come up. When was the beginning of that for you?
In contemplating that, if I look back, I was probably about 18 or 19. I started eating lunch at fast food restaurants. And I used to eat like the smallest burger or one taco and a small drink. And then it was kind of like, oh, I think I'll eat two today. And it was like, oh, I think I'll add this and add this. And volume started increasing and my weight started going up. And I got married young. I was 19. But I weighed like 100. I remember weighing 195. And I'd gone from like a 160 range to that. And I wanted to do everything I could because I was getting married to lose that weight.
Sure.
And I had no idea what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you asked for help. And
it was a different time nutritionally, too.
Well, and it was a different time back in the 70s. The largest clothing in a store was a size 16 or an 18,
mm-hmm.
which now they go up to 6X, 8X.
Right.
You know, and so... And
well, even the portion sizes. I mean, you can see where cups in the 60s, this was a large. And then today, you're not
like
even
a little kid's
serious if it's not this massive 76-ounce thing.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's when I can look back to some of that starting and developing bad habits.
Sure.
You know, and just, I don't know how foods were back then, but I know later there were things that made you want more, you know, and it wasn't satiating.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know in some of the conversations that we've had, you know, adolescence is, for nearly everybody, a really difficult time. Maybe more so for girls than guys. I'm not sure. I'm a girl, so I can speak from that, mm-hmm. you know, perspective. Back during your adolescence, did you know that there was a calling on your life?
I was getting inklings of it. Yes. At 16, my family was going through a really horrific divorce, and I begged my mom to take us to church. My parents were both backslidden. One was Methodist, one was Baptist. And they were like, you know, God didn't work for us, you know. Mm. And so I was begging my parents while they were going through things, why don't we go to church? Because I saw my grandparents on both sides. And whatever they had, I wanted.
Sure.
You know, and so my mom brought me a big family Bible about this big. She threw it in my lap and she said,
look, tabletop Bible.
Read it.
Yeah.
If you got any questions, ask me. I know all about it. But, you know, you'll find your answers in here. And so I took that Bible in my bedroom and I don't recommend this normally to people, but I took it and I closed it and I said, if you're real, show me. And I would say, I don't care if I have honor. I don't care if I have respect.
Familiar.
I don't care if I have money. Right. I don't care if I have this. But if somebody comes to me and wants to know about you so you can help them, then please give me wisdom and knowledge that I can teach your people.
Yeah.
And so I flipped it, flipped it, flipped it, rolled it, rolled it, rolled it. I didn't know anything about it anyway.
Right, exactly.
But I wanted to be whatever I pointed to be my answer. You show me you're real. And so I did that, and I pointed into Chronicles, and it said, because you have not asked for riches or wealth, or you've not asked for honor before men, but you've asked me for wisdom and knowledge, I'm going to grant you these things. I had a highlighter ready. Well, back then it would have been like a Sharpie or magic marker. Circled it, dated it, put my age, and I said, I knew you were real.
That's so special.
So I expected that if I asked for that wisdom and knowledge, he was going to give it to me.
Absolutely.
And then the teenage years hit.
That's tough.
You know?
And, oh, yeah.
And everything in there just pointed the opposite.
Sure.
I mean, I felt like it was every obstacle to stop you from growing.
That's so tough. That is so tough. You know, the things that you know the Lord brought you through when you were younger, did it, you know, strengthen your resolve back then to seek a healthier lifestyle?
I don't think I thought about lifestyle back then.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think I thought about health back then.
Mm-hmm.
When you're young, you're just like, now I'm going to have me two of them burgers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I'll add a third. I'll add a fish sandwich with it. I mean,
right.
No, yeah, we've talked about that.
And because you're young enough, for most people, your body kind of deals with it.
Right.
So you might see the fact that you don't look the same as you did the year before, but you don't know that you feel a lot different, and it's so intravenous, the decline.
Right.
And for so many, by the time you realize, oh my gosh, I've been totally arrested by health problems.
Yeah.
It was this tiny, you know, like you said,
incremental.
You know, one decision at a time,
right.
Incremental decline.
Yeah. Well, and back in the 70s, you know, I'm talking 76, 77, mm-hmm. 75. There weren't a lot of overweight people, at least in my mind.
No. Yeah.
They didn't even have clothing in the stores to support that.
We've had that discussion, you know, where if you Google, you know, Venice Beach or some beach back in the, you know, 40s, 50s, whatever, the pictures then or even the 70s to what you would see now, mm-hmm. it's such a drastic shift.
I mean, dramatic change.
Yeah.
And I just got to lead the way with being overweight back then. Yay.
Right.
You know,
that's
but I remember being at 16 and getting ready to go to a New Year's Eve party, and we went shopping, and I was never a shopper as a kid. I'm not that much of a shopper now, and we were going to look for an outfit for me for New Year's Eve. I had a date.
Oh, wow.
You know, and mm-hmm. and I'm like not in the teenage sizes, you know, and then you go to the women's sizes, and even in the women's size, I couldn't find something to wear. And my stepmother at the time, you know, she was like, this is embarrassing. We can't find something mm-hmm. for you. And so we finally find this oversized sweater, kind of. And I went, but that was the first time that I think I really felt shame.
Mm. Mm.
You know, that I wasn't like everybody else. And nobody ever told me that it's okay that you're unique.
Absolutely.
That you're, you know, in my mind, I was weird.
Mm.
And so those were some of the lessons that started coming even back then. You're fearfully and wonderfully
sure.
made. You're unique. You're not
right.
weird.
Absolutely.
You know?
But a lot of people, when they feel that way, they'll actually turn to something like food because it's the one thing they can control
Absolutely.
That gives them comfort and temporary pleasure or whatever.
Right.
And that
right.
actually, oftentimes even being pounded by people that care about you, you know, you've got to make decisions differently. You've got to stop eating. You've got to do whatever. I just personally have known so many people that psychology fails.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're already overwhelmed, they're already right. dealing with challenges, and so they're going to turn to the one thing they can control, which just makes it worse, and it's sort
right.
of circular,
it's circular.
Circular thinking
yeah.
and compounds things.
Well, and then it makes you even want to sneak.
Oh, right.
And hide.
No, I get that.
I mean, you
100%,
know. 100%,
yeah.
Because you're embarrassed, right?
Right. You don't want anybody to know you're eating, so then
See,
you
that,
get up
See, that's the difference between us, because I was 75 pounds heavier than I am now, totally indifferent. Totally agnostic to what people thought of me or whatever, which is also its own kind of danger, you know, but
right.
binge eating peanut butter until 1 a.m. to Netflix just because I felt like it and not having a clue that it was ruining my body.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, even the education that's given, you know, like you were talking about not understanding about things back then.
Right.
They weren't really into, we didn't have an obesity epidemic back then.
Right.
You know, and so I don't know why I chose that particular thing, but I guess it was better. You know, I call them sins of compulsion. You got alcoholism, drugs, overeating. Right. You know, the Bible talks about being a glutton. I didn't know that. I didn't have any education in
right.
that kind of thing.
You're absolutely right.
You know, and so you start drawing on something that's comforting to
sure.
you emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, home life was a wreck. I've even remembered, you know, as we've contemplated talking and when you and I were talking, my mother was raised on a farm, but she had to take care of the children. So she resented really cooking meals and doing things like that.
Wow.
And so we might have a couple meals a day or we'd give ourselves cereal in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I didn't want Cheerios. I wanted the sugary things,
right.
you know.
Right,
and,
absolutely.
You know, and later on, if my mom didn't feel like fixing supper, we'd be going, we're hungry.
Right.
And I got to a point that I used to say, I'm going to eat, when I get big, I'm going to eat whatever I want and how much I want, and nobody's going to stop me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, later on, you get to the point that you just go, that's not a healthy thing that you've put in your head.
But how did you get there? Because I'd really like for you to kind of elaborate on that. You've talked about, you know, sneaking food and saying to yourself, I'm going to eat whatever I want. Was there a point in your journey where you felt, oh my goodness, I've gone too far. I'm totally hostage to this eating thing. I can't walk the way that I used to. I can't do the things. And you started to actually feel the consequences of maybe living that way.
When clothing wouldn't fit, you'd feel the consequences of that.
Sure. I remember you told me a story one time, Debbie, about being up and down a ladder and healthy as an ox and doing your own house painting and stuff.
300 pounds.
Yeah, at 300 pounds and doing that. And so, but you were young. And again, you get back to that age thing. You don't really realize that it's chiseling away at your lifestyle.
Right. Yeah, sure.
And for those watching the program, not to interrupt, it all collapses very quickly. When you fuel your gut tube with things like sugars and hollow carbs, you actually fuel the type of bacteria in your gut that then begins to multiply more so than bacteria in your gut that reacts to things like vegetables or things that are healthy. So you'll actually begin cravings for the very things that you are also fighting temptation to eat. So the more you satisfy that gut flora imbalance, the more it thrives, expands, and then that really begins to be the only thing you can actually
eat. Well,
and
your brain, too.
You don't even taste vegetables. You're not even aware of the flavor, because all you do is, you know, the cereals and the candies and the ice creams and whatever. So
all the excitotoxins that tell the brain, I got to have it, I got to have it, I got to have it, and then 30 minutes later, you're starving because there was nothing nutritional you know, dense with
that. And for those that aren't familiar with an excitotoxin, it's a whole other show.
Yeah,
but make no mistake, the people that make these foods want you addicted to them, and they're putting artificial sweeteners in them that are also known as excitotoxins. They stimulate the brain to tell your body that you're having a rewarding experience for the purposes of driving you back and again and again and again.
Back then, I would have said my favorite meals was green beans and even cornbread. My grandma put lard in everything, you know, and of course, you went through seasons back in the 70s where you didn't eat fat and, you know, all the diet advice that they gave you.
Yeah, the fat-free cookies in the box. But
so my mom would get canned spaghetti. I don't want to mention, you know, names and stuff. and one of the things, and this is a silly story, but it's when cheese puffs came out. And you would get them in these great big two-foot bags at the store. And my mom, we would just go back, can we have another handful? Well, they don't fill you up.
No, right.
You know, and really we needed a meal. And that's when I would start saying, you know, when I get big, I'm going to eat whatever I want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you might go to someone's house and they go, meaning I had grown up, but they'd go, man, you're big.
Oh, my gosh.
Meaning I had grown up, but in my mind I had just weighed. And for the first time I wasn't skinny like the kids in school with me because I had more of an adult body, which nobody told me that was normal.
Right.
And here you're begging for food.
Yeah.
And then your mind says, oh, you're big. Well, it's because of the way you're eating.
You're filtering it a different
way. So things back then, you know, in retrospect, you can look back to some of that. But what I did is instead of taking in the nutrition and learning to eat a banana and some other things, what I started hearing was, you're big. The clothing's not fitting you.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I started believing labels that... whether they intended them to be bad, it's what I did in my own thinking.
You were telling yourself.
I was telling myself.
Sure.
And so it became thing after thing after thing like that. You know, getting on this bus at school and not fitting in a seat with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't that much overweight. Because I look at those pictures when I was 16 and I think, I would give anything to look like that right now. Size 14? Marilyn Monroe is a size 14.
No, exactly.
You know what I mean?
For sure, for sure.
But it's what I believed in my mind about myself.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know all the 40 I ams that God says we are.
Amen.
And so you start believing all those lies.
Sure.
Somewhere those lies have to get dispelled. Somewhere there's someone sitting in the audience that believes those same things about themselves.
You're right.
Instead of saying, you're unique and fearfully and wonderfully made, it's like you're weird. Well, unique and weird can kind of be the same thing.
Right.
But it depends on what aspect you're looking at the words.
That's exactly right.
You know, and so simultaneously with all the failings and the shame that I felt was shame and failings, somewhere God had to get in there and start going, I need to correct your thinking.
Amen.
You know, and so people used to laugh at me. I started going to meetings and stuff after I got married in church and because I was hungry. something deep inside me was hungry, but it wasn't for food.
Right.
It was for who I was in Him.
Amen.
And somewhere you have to start drawing on that aspect. But, you know, it says, I once was blind, mm-hmm. but now I see. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd start thinking, well, I've arrived. Mm-hmm. I got this figured out. And it's like, okay, Deb, we're going to peel off another layer today.
Oh, ouch.
You know, and the layers grinding. Of understanding. And
yeah.
I call them sandpaper friends.
There you go.
You know, that they just kind of rub ouch. You the wrong way and it kind of ticks you off what they
yes.
say. But they're teaching you truth.
I think about it as a pearl. Because a pearl yes. is formed because of an irritant in the shell.
Right.
So
right.
I try to filter that.
Right.
No, with that.
Right.
Debbie, were there times where you identified the need for change and would go about a season of eating differently or something like that and then feel later on like you had caved or failed or collapsed or returned back to the temptations or things like that? Because I know that there's people watching this show.
Sure.
They're hanging on to every word because they're waiting for the part of the program where you're going to reveal the secret trick that you've
right.
used,
the magic.
You know, for the 200 pounds yep. that you've lost.
Yep.
And they're probably also still wondering at the onset of the program, you talked about a doctor that gave you a 2% chance to
right.
live. Like, we're trying, folks, to get through this. But
it's
were there times when, you know, you felt like, I've done it again.
Mm.
Maybe a holiday. Maybe you do really good up till Thanksgiving, but you're going to allow yourself a season, and then something comes about where you feel like you've failed. Because that is so, so intrinsic to so many of
oh,
the
yeah.
journeys that all
Absolutely.
Of us have been on.
Mm-hmm. Like an addict, and I never thought of myself as an addict until years and years and years later, but I would get so frustrated. I was always telling God, I'm sorry, I failed again today.
Mm-hmm.
I blew it again. I couldn't even get through 24 hours sometimes.
Wow.
You know, if not doing something to feel like I was comforting myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know that I looked at food then as a comfort. It was a pattern of habit that developed that it comforted me, but I did it out of survival mode,
sure.
I think. You know, that's the only way I can explain it right now, is you just develop how you're sustaining life. But it was through the emotions of a horrific divorce in
uh-huh.
my family.
Right.
It was through wanting parents to be what they needed to be in their life to me. And
right.
a lot of times I was an adult. I was babysitting my brother and sister while my parents ran around at 7 and 8 years old.
Goodness.
Standing on a chair to cook. We didn't have microwaves back then. You didn't have phones to
mm-hmm.
cell phones to call and check and see if everything was okay. And standing on a stove and cooking for my brother and sister.
That's a
and
lot.
And my brother was a baby.
That's a lot.
I look at a 10-year-old right now and I think,
there's no way.
There's just no way
no.
that you give that child that responsibility. My father would call from work and say, how is everything going? Well, one day he called home and I'd put a Pyrex bowl, you know, that you can
oh,
bake
yeah.
in.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then they were like green and yellow
yeah,
and all the weird
yeah.
colors, you know. It had a corn casserole in it. And my mom said, just, you know, eat this. Not heat up. Well, I didn't heat it up. I was spooning it to the kids. And I thought, oh, I want hot food. So I thought, well, I'll put it up on the burner. And
oh,
I turned
goodness.
The burner on underneath. It will explode.
Yeah.
So yep. my dad called and said, how's things going? I'm crying, you know. So he ran home to take care of all that. But he was a half hour away. And I was
goodness.
7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you know, during those times.
That kind of sets you
well,
up.
Was, what I'm trying to point
anxious.
Out is just the emotional things. That
Absolutely.
The responsibility I took on at a very young age. And even being 15 and 16 when my parents were going through their divorce, it was the emotional things. And so you feed yourself
mm-hmm.
in something that comforts you.
Right.
Think I'm going to go get me this and think I'm going to find that.
Well, we've talked about, you know, food. You know, right now seems to be the most over-abused anxiety drug.
Right.
You know, and it's sad, but it's, you know, you think...
Absolutely.
I'm not, you know, shooting up with a needle.
Right.
I'm not
right.
getting a pharmacological and, you know,
right.
taking this or taking that. I'm just having a bowl of macaroni and cheese.
Right.
I mean, you know, honestly.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
I even went through... There was a lot of substance abuse in my family, alcohol in particular, back in the 70s, and with the adults that were around me, and I thought, I'm not doing that. My parents smoked, they drank coffee, and I said, I am never doing that.
Yeah.
And I've never smoked, and I've never drank coffee. I haven't even tasted coffee, truthfully, because
yeah.
I hated that smell in the morning, that combination.
Sure.
All the drapes are closed, the house is full of the fog.
Yeah, yeah.
They got one cigarette burn in here, one in the other room.
Goodness.
And I'm like, so I made judgment
on
calls.
On your slate of your soul.
But I never thought overeating. It's like I traded the compulsion. And so I still probably develop habits from what I saw.
Sure.
Sure.
I just didn't understand
different.
It was bad.
You applied it.
Because you
got to
eat.
Right.
Yeah, right.
You
got to
eat,
right.
You know.
So, Miss Debbie, you know, we opened the show by telling the viewers that at one point the doctors gave you like less than a 2% chance to live. Mm-hmm. What was that rock bottom, you know, I call it you have to reach up to touch rock bottom kind of moment for you?
I ended up in a state of disease that I had endometrial cancer.
Mm.
My uterus was full. I mean, and I've medical documentation saying that it was the size of about a 7-month-old baby or a basketball. And I kept telling them I felt like I was laying on a ball. And they'd look at me and they'd go, well, duh. And they'd just look at my outward.
Oh,
and I'm crying out for help saying something's wrong.
Not taking you.
Right. And so it wasn't until I really started hemorrhaging humongous kiwi-sized clots that my husband said, you are going to the doctor today. And when I went in there, they told me I had cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And, in fact, it was so full they couldn't even get up in there and look around, you know. And I found out on the phone, and my husband was out mowing, and the doctor said, I want you to come in. I go, look, I already know there's an issue, so just tell me. And I wrote it down. At that point, I probably weighed, I'm going to say probably around 480.
My goodness.
And I didn't, and if you would have asked me how much I weighed, I would have said about 350. And I had someone challenge me. And I went to the hospital after I was getting sick. And they took me upstairs and weighed me in a bed. And I weighed, because the bed's weight is the only thing that would weigh me. I couldn't get on a scale at home, you know. And I thought mine was broken. You know, I just didn't know it didn't go that high. But anyway. Denial.
Right.
And so I found out when they weighed me in the bed, I weighed 457 pounds. I'll never forget that number.
Wow.
And I just thought, how did this get that bad?
Right.
And so when I ended up going to several sets of doctors, the first one told me, he said, what's going on in you is so bad, I can't even physically handle it.
Debbie.
That they've called somebody in Springfield and set up a team
like
for me.
Like a specialist or
And I had to wait 2 weeks for that appointment.
Oh, the time that you waited, I can only imagine. You know, going
where your imagination goes.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
theater of the mind.
I really
goes.
Went to the point that said, all I can do is just bury myself in you.
Was he the doctor that put a number on it, though, and said, or was
that
the surgeon?
No, it was the second one, the surgeon. When I went to the surgeon told me, he said, what you've got going on with you is going to take a team of people and probably 15 hours worth of surgery.
Oh, my goodness.
He said, if we can even pull you through it. I said, so what are we looking at? And he said, if I can even pull you through the surgery, 2% chance to live. He said, and if I can get you through the next 15 days, you know, and I said, well, I'm not doing this.
I was going to say, because he didn't know that you're a fighter, though.
No, and so, so I stood up and I said, I'm done. You know?
That's one of my favorite parts of the story is, you know, she just refused to receive the label.
I always say, I'm not going to this party.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, don't speak that
and
over
so
me.
And so they, and Chuck was the one, he goes, you need to sit down. We got to talk this through.
Because you were going
to
leave, right?
I was out the door. Yeah,
yeah.
I was
now, Chuck,
out the door.
Chuck.
Like he would disappear.
Right, yeah.
You know, Chuck,
right,
your husband starts telling you, you got to calm down. You know, this is very serious. You got to listen to the doctor.
Right. So I told the doctor, I said, now, me who couldn't get through 24 hours, me who couldn't lose weight when I just needed to lose 50 pounds, now I'm over 450, you know, now I'm going to say 457 because that's what showed medically at the hospital. I needed to lose weight to even to have surgery. And I'm like, I couldn't even lose enough weight to anything before.
Right.
Why didn't I lose weight when I was 195 pounds and get down back down? It was just 30, 40 pounds to lose.
Right.
So I'm telling the doctor, I'm going to go lose weight. And he goes, okay, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to get in the pool and run. So I got in the pool and ran for 3 weeks. I ran 3 hours a day in the pool.
Oh, my gosh.
And I dropped weight. And I got down to about, I think when I had surgery, I weighed about 390 pounds is what's in the medical records. That's from memory. That's been 2005. So I'd lost a little bit, and I was really proud of that weight.
Sure.
In my mind, I probably thought I weighed like 220 pounds because it's a mind game through everything that you're playing.
Oh, for sure.
And so then they had me going to my doctor and getting ready for surgery, making sure blood work was in order. And then the time came that the surgery, it was either the surgery had to be scheduled or the cancer was going to get me.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we scheduled the surgery, and I had a lot of people come to the hospital, and I went to an anesthesiologist just the day before the surgery. He goes, he's looking at the paperwork, and he goes, my God, he goes, do you know what's going on with you? And I go, yeah. And he goes, is all your paperwork in order? I said, yes. He goes, you got a will and everything, and you said goodbye to your family? And I go, and I just looked at him, I said, are you any good at your job?
Oh, snap.
And the nurse is standing behind me going, you know.
That's hilarious.
And he goes, well, yeah. And I said, are you going to be in charge of this? And he goes, we got to have a team of people. And I said, well, if you're not the best, then you better find out who is, because you need to know this about me. I plan on living.
We're going to have to cut right there for today. There's just so much that we want to...
We haven't even gotten started.
No, we haven't even scratched anything. So, you know, we want you to come back.
Okay.
We'll do another show with you.
Be delighted to.
So excited to have you. And I think
we want to spend some time next week, too, really getting into what you've done since that have then yielded these wonderful results and such an uptick. We haven't even gotten into your cardiovascular challenges.
Right.
So much ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So next time, folks, you need to join us again. I'm Charisse Parton. Live better, eat better, feel better.
Millions of Americans are suffering a health crisis epidemic right now, completely unnecessarily. But what if I told you it didn't have to be this way? The truth for many is that the real culprit of modern disease is simply a lack of God-given knowledge. In Unlocking Eden, we provide hopeful, scientifically supported revelations regarding how you can access freedom from the bondages of disease. SkyWatch TV is proud to announce the Unlocking Eden Special Collection. From the importance of detoxification, circadian rhythm, intermittent fasting, and unburdening metabolic pathways to maximizing immunity, methylation, and absolute essentials like quality sleep, Unlocking Eden is filled cover to cover with groundbreaking information that can help unlock the body's natural healing mechanisms, which can revolutionize your health and your life. In this incredible special collection from SkyWatch TV, you'll also receive the Unlocking Eden Companion DVD, featuring the entire four-week television series on Unlocking Eden and special content with my co-author Daniel Belt and I on securing some of nature's most powerful antiviral nutrition during seasons of virus, flu, and so much more. We're also including the never-before-released special edition Eden's Essentials publication featuring special reports on gut health, chronic pain and sleep management, fermented foods, and so much more. You'll also receive the Eden's Essentials Founders Vision DVD featuring interviews with Dr. Thomas Horn and Daniel Belt and I on our vision to provide nutrient-dense supplements derived directly from non-genetically modified foods, grown from clean soil free of pesticides, herbicides, and biosediments to achieve the highest degree of health possible. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of over $150. Yours now for a donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So revolutionize your health, maximize your immunity, and restore your vitality. The Unlocking Eden Special Collection, available now at the SkyWatch TV store online. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.